Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
You know how in football, timing is everything? You miss your window by a second and the play's already gone. The holidays are the same way. Everything happens fast, and if you're not ready, you're scrambling at the last minute. That's why Amazon Prime is the real MVP this season.
With Prime's fast, free shipping, you can make those last-minute calls look effortless. Forgot your secret Santa gift? Need something for that office party? Prime's got your back, helping you go from uh-oh to all set faster than a two-minute drill.
Absolutely, Mark, because Prime isn't just about getting things fast. It's about making sure you never miss your shot. It turns that last-minute scramble into a smooth holiday win. So this season, remember, Prime's fast delivery has your back during the holidays, especially when it's down to the wire and can't wait another minute. Last-minute gifts delivered, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to shop now.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.
KYW News Radio Original Podcasts.
It's just a good conversation with somebody that you didn't know you were interested in. I'm Matt Leon, and this is One-on-One.
I thought the roof was going to pop up, and it's amazing that everybody stayed up in the spectrum. All the fans stayed up and clap and scream for the last, what, maybe 5 minutes remaining in that game. It was just amazing, and there's a lot of things that happened in that last 5 minutes.
And our guest this week is former Philadelphia Flyers defenseman J.J. Daigneau. J.J., thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Matt.
So these days, you are a head hockey coach, the Halifax Mooseheads in the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League. Obviously, no hockey right now, but how's life been for you for the last several months here during the pandemic?
Well, it's been really good. I was in Halifax last year when the pandemic started. That was March 15th, if I remember well. Our league was shut down, so the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League was shut down on March 15th. And I returned back home the very next day. I went back to my cottage in Montreal. My wife was there already. My daughter that studies at the University of Pittsburgh was with us on our spring break as well as my 13-year-old daughter. So we went down there, and actually it was a long quarantine or a long confinement, but for us it was pretty easy because, you know, we're at the cottage, we're just by the lake. So we got down there, obviously, at one point when I got there, I was ice fishing, and then 3 months later, I was fishing on my pontoon. So we got to live through the seasons. It was long, but it wasn't really a confinement where I had to be stuck in a 1,000 square foot apartment for 6 months.
So right now, we were talking beforehand, as we're recording this in mid-December, you guys are shut down, but hopeful you'll get back out there end of January, maybe?
Well, I think the league is hoping so. Right now, the province of Nova Scotia, even though there's not many COVID cases down here, has decided to shut down any team sports as well as restaurants and pubs and bars. So for us, I think we were on standby for 2 weeks. That being said, on the very next day, the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League decided to shut down the league to give an opportunity to their players to go back home for the holidays. And we're going to bring all our players back. We're hoping to bring them back on January 3rd for a two-week quarantine or confinement, where they would be allowed to get out of their hotel room and go for a workout at the rink and get on the ice. And hopefully the season, there's not really a set date per se, but I think they're hoping to start mid-January or early February. So I think that this is the ballpark that they're aiming for.
So let's talk a little bit about your life. Born in Montreal, correct?
Yes, absolutely. Born in Montreal and in the southwest of the city, probably 10 minutes away from the old Forum. So yes, that's where I spent most of my youth until I left at 17 years old to play with the Olympic program in Calgary, Alberta. So obviously, being born in Montreal, I was a big Habs fan back then. Like, I probably saw 3 or 4 of their parades in the late 70s when I was a young teen, and it probably ignited something in me.
Yeah, it was hockey. From a playing standpoint growing up, was hockey your main focus?
Well, it was. You know, I grew up in front of a park where we had 4 ice rinks. So 2 ice rinks where we could play hockey and 2 where you could only skate. But obviously it was right there within 30 seconds walking distance for me. So I spent a lot of days just playing shinny hockey with all the neighborhood kids on Saturday, all day on Saturdays and Sundays. On weekends, and but obviously, growing up in Montreal, most of the young kids were Montreal Canadiens fans, and when we played on these rinks, there was always one Guy Lafleur and one Serge Chavard and one Yvan Cournoyer, and obviously the goalie was Ken Dryden. So it was part of our youth, you know, to play a lot of hockey, and even when the winter had gone by, we played in schoolyards with our buddies, with just our runners and the orange balls, the orange plastic balls. So I think it was hockey year round.
And did I read you played with Mario Lemieux in Pee Wees?
Well, we grew up in the same neighborhood, and we were 7th Street apart.
Okay.
So from the age of 5 to 9 years old, I played for, I would say, my parish. Where the church was, and when hockey got more competitive for me, and I joined the AA rank at the age of 10 years old, probably Pee Wee. So obviously I was trying to do Pee Wee AA as a centerman my first year. And obviously the top center there was Mario Lemieux. So that's probably one of the first time I got to meet him, even though we grew up in the same neighborhood. We didn't go to the same school because we weren't part of the same parish. But there must have been like 7 blocks from my house to his house. But when I got to play Bantam AA, my first year at 10 years old, I went there as a centerman. And obviously it was my first year, so they cut me. But at the same time, they offered me, because I was a good skater, to give it a try on the backside. So I think my coach was pretty good. He said, listen, JJ, you're a good skater. You know, you're making a good first pass. Maybe we can use you on the backside. So I wasn't all that sad to be cut, you know, and become a defenseman because of Mario Lemieux, because it turned out pretty good. But that's where I started to play defense at Pee Wee AA. And then we went on to play together 2 years Pee Wee AA, 2 years Bantam AA, 1 year Midget AAA, as well as our first year junior, where he was the first overall pick with Les Voisins de Laval. And I was the second round pick of the last pick of the second round by the same team. So we also played together at the age of 16 years old in the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League. And then after that, I think it was an expansion draft where I didn't get protected, and I went on to play with another junior team. But yes, we spent a lot of time winning championship as a young hockey player growing up. And we also spent a lot of times in schoolyards in the summer. It's amazing the amount of time that we spent. I think that all the players from our team, as well as our school, was just a phone call away, where you wanted to play in the hockey school on a weekend. So, you know, we would make a phone call on Saturday morning or Sunday morning, and then just have a shinny hockey game together. So we had a good group of kids, because there's a lot of kids from our Bantam team that went on to play Quebec Major Junior Hockey. So I think that most of the players had a strong influence, probably from Mario, probably maybe from myself. There's also Marc Bergevin that played with us as well, who's now the GM in Montreal. But Marc didn't make the first year. His first year, he played Pee Wee A, I believe, and then he joined us the second year. At the bantam level, he did the same thing. Like, he played A, and then he joined us on the second year. But he obviously was there with us, and we also spent a lot of time together. So it was a fun group of kids. Obviously, we just played hockey for fun. We didn't play hockey to make a living out of it or just to follow our passion. We were just young kids having fun at that time.
Was it apparent even at the young age that Mario was something very special?
Oh, he was very good. He was really good. He was dominant. Obviously, his size he wasn't that big of a kid. No, even though he's 6'5" today, I think he only started to grow when he was 15 years old. We left Bantam AA probably left at 5'10". I was maybe 5'9", and then he showed up for training camp. The year, 1 year later, for midget AAA was 6'2", and then junior, he kept growing. But so he wasn't really dominant with his size at that young age, but he was very dominant with his skills. He was really a step ahead of everybody. And I think that when I look back, I strongly believe that I benefited from that, because obviously you're taking 2-on-1s and 1-on-1s in practice and 3-on-2s against a player that became one of the best players of all time in the NHL. I think you can only benefit from that as a defenseman.
Did you take to being a defenseman right away? Did you enjoy it? I mean, obviously it worked out, like you said, it worked out very well for you. But at the young age there, were you frustrated or were you just happy to be playing?
No, I wasn't. Not that I was happy to be playing, but, you know, I think it's a part of the game that I really enjoyed. I think it catered well to my personality. Maybe I was more of a cerebral defenseman, but I think that one of the thing that my minor hockey coach said later on when I was playing professional hockey, said, you know what, JJ always had the knack for getting one big body check every game when he was a kid. So I guess maybe I had a little bit of a bite to my game at that age, but I really enjoyed what playing defense was all about. It was about seeing the play, making some good reads, and being a good quarterback. And I think that's probably what my coach at that time saw in me, and that's why he put me on defense. So I was very welcome to getting bumped back to being a defenseman. And the other thing too, that what happens when you join the ranks of double letters or a very competitive team as a young kid is that there's probably less individual play and more team play. And maybe, again, that catered well for me because I like to play more as a team. And so I was very welcome to the change, and I was really happy about the change because for me, back then, that team was the Montreal Hurricanes. And we got to be well-known throughout the province of Quebec, obviously for Mario. But we also had, obviously, there was myself, there was Marc Bergevin. We had a goaltender named Carl Parker, who went on to play with in the Quebec Junior League too, and he had success. So anywhere we played, anywhere we went on a tournament, it's like, oh, the Montreal Hurricanes are in town. Take a look at them. There's that kid. There's the other kid there on the backside. So I think we got to be well-known in our own province.
When do you start thinking that you're going to be able to play hockey at the pro level? I mean, obviously, the level you're playing at, the success you're having, when does it start to enter that I'm going to be able to probably carry this to a pro team?
Well, it's not really that I really start at a certain age to start thinking I have a chance or this is what I want to do for a living. I don't think that my thought process was in trying to become a professional hockey player, but my thought process was more one where I need to invest more time in becoming a better hockey player. So it's funny because when I take a look at myself as a young kid and showing up at the draft at 18 years old, it's not, it's funny because today I'm coaching junior kids that are 17 years old and are eligible for being drafted. And it seems to me that like they're looking at the price instead of looking at the process of going there. They're looking at the outcome and say, it's my draft year, I have to do well. And for me, when it was my draft year, I never thought about the draft. I always thought about I have to be disciplined, I have to go to school, I have to shoot my heavy pucks. I have to get stronger physically. So I think that there's a time, probably when I was 16 years old, to be honest with you, is to, after having a very good talk with one of my eldest brother, who also played in the Quebec Junior League, and was a New York Ranger draft pick, after having a good talk with him, I didn't decide to become a professional hockey player, but I decided to really invest time in the game and to see where it could take me. And obviously, when you make sacrifices and you invest in your discipline, oftentimes it's going to work in your favor.
And one of the places it took you was the 84 Olympics, right? You were on the Canadian Olympic team. That had to be wild at that age.
Well, it was a great challenge for me. And like I was saying, Matt, at 16 years old, I remember I had a gym that was probably maybe 3 miles from my place. And I went down there, took my bike one morning just after my hockey season was over. I took my bike. I drove to the gym. And actually, the owner of the gym, it was called the Nautilus Gym. The owner was an ex-hockey player. I think he's a player who had played for the Nordiques at one point. So I went to sit in his office, and I said, listen, I want to work out. I know you have a three-month rebate, or you have 3 months for – it was like 3 months for $99. I went down and started to negotiate with him and say, listen, I want to work out this summer. Can you do it for $60? We don't have much money. So he finally gave me a good deal on the membership, and I would probably go there 5 or 6 times a week and try to get stronger. So I think at 16 years old, I invested a lot of time, and that's probably the reason that at 17 years old, I was able to have the great season that I had in junior and was invited to the national Olympic team for the 84 Olympics. So and obviously, when I joined the team, I don't think I didn't feel I was a step behind, or I don't feel like I was weaker than all the 22 and 23 year old senior college players I was joining, because I had invested a lot of time and tried to get stronger that summer. So I think it really paid off. And for me, it was a great decision because the year before, at 17 years old, I had an unbelievable season with the expansion team in Longueuil and with our head coach, Jacques Lemaire, who had won countless Stanley Cups in Montreal. He was a great mentor to me. He was a great coach. I think not only Jacques Lemaire helped me improve my fundamentals, like the part of my game, my stick handling, my shot and all that, but he also taught me at a young age how to manage the game, how to make sure that the clock was my best friend when I was getting on the ice, and always, you know, take my decisions, considering what the score was in that game. So it was really helpful to me. I had an unbelievable season at 17, and for me, it was time to move on. So that's one of the reason. Obviously, the Olympic program approached me, and I had to take a decision whether I was going to stay junior or join the Olympic program. But I don't think I had anything more to attain playing junior at the age of 18 years old because I was a late birthday. And I think it's probably the best decision I ever made as a young hockey player, as well as my family, because my mom and dad were part of that decision. But obviously, I was joining a group of older players. I was joining men. I was also playing against men. When I joined the Olympic program mid-August, I was 17 years old. I only turned 18 mid-October. So I got to play against the Oilers and Wayne Gretzky at 17 years old. And I got to play against the AHL and IHL hockey team. So for me, it was a step in the right direction. It was a stepping board towards the next level that was in the back of my mind.
What's the Olympic experience like representing your country? Just the aside from the hockey, but just, you know, wearing the emblem and being a part of something that represents your country.
Yes, well, I think it's everything that surrounds the Olympic. It's the Olympic the city where the athletes stay. The fact that you get acquainted with other athletes, whether it's Pete Skinner. I got to meet Gaetan Boucher, who gave me an unbelievable leg workout that I used for the rest of my career. So And not only that, I got to meet some great athletes, but on this one, on meeting Gaétan Boucher, I really got the benefit of getting a good leg workout that I used the rest of my career. But obviously, when the team wasn't playing, or when the team was at a day off or just a day of practice, we tried to see as many competitions as we could. So we got to see, again, Gaétan Boucher was the best Canadian skater, or speed skater at that time. Now we got to see some figure skating and some ski jumping, a little bit of everything. But it's fun to go see other discipline and not only us playing hockey and focusing on what we had to do. And it also took our minds off of the process of trying to win the medal in those Olympics. So I think to answer your question, it's just the whole package that the Olympics has to offer, with the beautiful then city of Yugoslavia, who obviously went to war afterwards, and the athletes that you meet and all the acquaintance that you make.
So then you get drafted, I think, 10th overall by Vancouver in 84. What was the draft experience like? Obviously, the draft in 1984 is a lot different than it is now. Wasn't the made-for-TV event that we see. Were you there? Did you get a call at home? What was draft day like?
Well, I was there, Matt, but I didn't want to be there. The reason was the very last game that I played with the Longueuil. So after the Olympics, that probably ended around March 20th or something like that, the end of March, I joined my junior team back for 10 games. I think maybe 10 games remaining at the end of the season, as well as a playoff run. And I think in game five, in the final against Laval, against Mario Lemieux, I got it and sprained my knee really bad. So I had a really bad injury where my ACL came off my bone, and I had to get operated. I was out for 6 months. Obviously, back then, they didn't do arthroscopic surgery. They open you up, and just the scar took maybe 6 weeks to heal. But anyway, I was on crutches when the draft came around, and I told my mom and dad, I said, I don't want to go to the Montreal Forum on crutches. I don't think it looks good. And then, obviously, my parents told me that it's only going to happen once. There's only going to be a draft. I think you're rated pretty high, so. I showed up at the Montreal Forum with my crutches, and I went to the Vancouver Canucks table on crutches as well. So that was my experience of the draft. It was a really good one. It's decisions that I don't regret, because again, it only comes around once. You're only 18 years old once. You can only get drafted once. And again, it's taking me back to your earlier question when you were asking. Did you want to play professional hockey at a young age? The answer was no. And then when you're sitting there, you don't really have any favorite in terms of, do I want to go play for Montreal? Do we have the Boston Bruins or the Philadelphia Flyers? At that point, you just want to get drafted, and you just want to have the opportunity to play at the next level. Again, take your game to another level. So for me, the Vancouver Canucks was that opportunity. June of 1984, and it was a great day.
So you get healthy, and you start playing in the NHL. You're still a teenager. I would imagine, for a lot of people, I like to ask, what's the transition like to the pro game, speed of the game, stuff like that. Am I wrong that maybe the transition wasn't as difficult for you because the Olympic experience and, oh, by the way, grew up playing against Mario Lemieux, so... I would imagine you had a very good feel for what that high level was like.
Yes, and obviously, playing at the Olympic level the year before, playing with men most of that year. Obviously, we did play against college players. We did play against the U.S. Olympic team, but most of that year was playing against the Swedish Olympic team. So we played against. The Russian were Larionov, Krutov, and Makarov. Was their top players with Fedosov, Trechak, and all these guys. So I think I was ready. I think I'd worked really hard to rehab my knee. I had worked really hard as well to keep getting stronger. But physically, I'm not a big defenseman. No, I played in the NHL at 5'11" and 180 pounds. So I was probably more the prototype of the 2020 defenseman than the prototype of what teams were looking for a defenseman back then. But at the same time, I wasn't really intimidated, and the speed wasn't an issue for me because I was always a good skater. So sometimes because I had the opportunity to coach at pretty much every level right now, I started at the AHL, went to the NHL, now I'm back in junior. To me, for a hockey player to get to every level or to the next level, it's an adjustment to pace. And some players never adjust to pace. So some people go from junior to the American Hockey League, and 3 years later, the management as well as them will find out that that pace is too fast. And the player can't really adjust. But for me, that wasn't an issue. I think the issue might have been physicality, but I think I was able to get by with smarts, speed, reaction time, and other elements of my game that made me survive at a young age.
So your first couple of years are with Vancouver, and then you get traded to the Flyers. I think it's June of 86. Do you remember how you learned you were getting dealt, and how much of a shock was it?
It wasn't much of a shock, Matt, because at that time, even if I was 20 years old, I had told my agent that I wanted to get traded from Vancouver. I played there when I was 19 and 20 years old because I'm a late birthday. I played when I was 19, 20 years old. The Vancouver Canucks were a team rebuilding. With the young draftees, the previous draft before me were Cam Neely, Michel Petit, Rick Lanz. So there were a lot of good hockey players. But to me, honestly, I didn't think that the team was going in the right direction. I think that the management wanted to rebuild, I don't think that the young kids coming into the Vancouver Canucks were very welcome and tried to assert themselves and taking on bigger roles or even taking roles and responsibilities that would have been taken away from veterans. So I think there was a little bit of a clash between the old and the new kids coming in. I could sense that, and as a result, and the other thing, because I was far from my family, I was 19 years old. And I really found it difficult to be away from my family. And I see it today coaching young kids that are 17, 18 years old. They come from Quebec. They come from Prince Edward Island. They're with us for 2 months, but at one point, they're living with billets. They miss their families. So I can understand them. And that's really the reason that motivated me asking my agent to be traded. So I wasn't really shocked when I got traded. I was just looking for a new start somewhere else.
Time for a break on One-on-One. We will have more with former Flyer J.J. Daigneau right after this.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
You know how in football, timing is everything? You miss your window by a second, and the play's already gone. The holidays are the same way. Everything happens fast, and if you're not ready, you're scrambling at the last minute. That's why Amazon Prime is the real MVP this season.
With Prime's fast, free shipping, you can make those last-minute calls look effortless. Forgot your secret Santa gift? Need something for that office party? Prime's got your back, helping you go from uh-oh to all set faster than a two-minute drill.
Absolutely, Mark, because Prime isn't just about getting things fast. It's about making sure you never miss your shot. It turns that last-minute scramble into a smooth holiday win. So this season, remember, Prime's fast delivery has your back during the holidays, especially when it's down to the wire and can't wait another minute. Last-minute gifts delivered. It's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to shop now.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.
Hey, everybody, it's Cherry Gregg here. You may know me around town as KYW News Radio's community affairs reporter, but every week I produce and host Flashpoint, a podcast where we highlight the hot topics in Philadelphia, local newsmakers and change makers burning things up in our region. From gerrymandering to gender equality and policing in schools, we'll walk you through the flames on Flashpoint. It's available wherever you downloaded this podcast that you're listening to now. So subscribe. Thanks so much.
And we are back on One-on-One. Our guest this week, former Flyers defenseman J.J. Daigneau. What did you know about Philadelphia before you got here?
Nothing at all.
What's your first memory of Philadelphia, of becoming a Flyer?
Well, it was probably the city. You know, I really enjoyed the city. Obviously, there's the Rocky movie, and there's the Rocky statue, and there's the Museum of Art downtown. I think that the downtown Philly has changed a lot in the past 30 years. But back then, I think it was a good blue collar city. Obviously, my wife and I got to go downtown. We didn't get to go downtown oftentimes because we lived in Cherry Hill in South Jersey. We took the time to go down there and go to restaurants. So, Philadelphia is a great city, and obviously I didn't get to spend a lot of time before in Philadelphia, but I got to spend a lot of time there in the past couple of years because my oldest daughter graduated 2 years ago from Villanova as an NCAA swimmer on a scholarship, and so I got sort of reacquainted to the city of Philadelphia because every time that we played New York against the Rangers as an assistant coach for the Montreal Canadiens, I would take the train and come and have dinner with her and take the train back to New York and do my work, prepare my meetings on the plane. So I got to take my daughter 4 years when she was studying at Villanova to good restaurant downtown Philly. So it made me sort of fall in love with the city again.
So when you come into the team, you come into a pretty good team with the Flyers. What was the vibe like in the locker room? How much fun was that season leading up to the appearance in the Stanley Cup Finals?
Well, it was an amazing season. The vibe in Philly was incredible. And I think that the vibe was that good because of its leadership group. Obviously I probably got down there early August to start to work out with some of the players. Obviously you have Dave Poulin that welcomes you, Brad McCrimmon, great team players, Ron Extall, Mark Howell, Brad Marsh, who I still talk to today. I think that the Flyers were successful with a very young team because of a very good leadership group that they have there. There's a lot of players that I'm missing out. You know, the Prop, the Kerr, the Samuelson, Doug Crossman. I think that the mix of the older players having been around the NHL with the Rick Tocchet and the Scott Mellenby, the Derek Smith, all these young kids. I think the mix was unbelievable. But the strength of that team was really the veteran group.
So you guys have a ton of success rolling through the playoffs, and then in the finals in 87, you get Edmonton, and I think we can throw that team probably on a list of the most powerful teams in history. Obviously, it starts with Gretzky, but it's so much more. What are you guys feeling heading into that series? I mean, it's a big challenge, but you guys are very good as well.
Yes, well, I'm not taking anything away from the team that we had, but it was, you know, with skill versus skill and grit and work ethic. So I think that we had obviously the firepower to compete with
with the Edmonton Oilers. But I think that the Oilers, especially at the top of their roster with the top two lines, were so talented that sometime they would get into games and maybe things would get easy because, you know, they were so talented. So I think that's probably the one advantage that we had against them. I think that we were a very well-conditioned team. I think Mike Keenan was huge on players being fit. So we had very good work ethic. We're a hard-working team. We're a team that never gave up. Obviously, we could see we came back in series. We came back in games. So there was sort of a no-quit attitude amongst the roster. And but no, we knew what we were against. But no, we also knew that the Edmonton Oilers learned quite a bit in their last final against the last final that they lost against the Islanders, because the Islanders were a skilled team, but they also finished series all banged up. And I think that's probably how the Edmonton Oilers start to put it together, is that they start to understand that there was a work ethic and a price to pay and a strong commitment that had to be made to win a championship. And that's where we caught them. They were probably at the top of their game at that time, you know, in 84 and 85 and 86. But obviously, we got ourselves in a good situation. You know, we're down in the series, and you know, we found a way to get back in back in that series as well.
Yeah, it's 3-2 Edmonton, game six. What I forgot researching for this is you guys are down 3-2 in that game six at the Spectrum, and you also trailed 2-0 after a period. So they really got you on the ropes, get two goals to tie it, and then obviously you score an absolutely iconic goal that I think even casual sports fans in Philadelphia, I can tell you this, I've done a lot of episodes of this podcast talking to different people in Philadelphia sports, and at least twice this goal has come up in conversation, and not necessarily in conversations about hockey, just about Philadelphia sports, fandom, stuff like that. Take me through this goal, because I was watching another interview. You weren't supposed to be on the ice, or you were expecting to come off the ice.
Well, that's the funniest part, Matt, about this goal, is that obviously I'm a 21-year-old defenseman, and obviously I'm playing a regular shift. We're playing at home, so Mike Keenan is the last change, when I was on the when Gretzky was on the ice, I was probably supposed to be off the ice. If I understood my responsibilities well, Mark Howe and Brad McCrimmon, as well as Brad Marsh and Shel Samuelson, were probably the top two lines match. So anyway, I had just jumped on the ice. I believe I wheeled my net and made an outlet pass. But as I made my outlet pass, I could see at the far end of the ice Edmonton's bench changing, and I saw Gretzky get on the ice and Yari Curry. So I headed to the bench. As soon as I made my pass, I believe I headed to the bench. And Mike Keenan, it was a quiet bench at that time. Obviously, the game was tied. And Mike Keenan yelled at me, he said, get the beep out there. So I just skated up the ice, tried to close my gap offensively. Yari Curry picked up a loose puck in the high slot. I think he wanted to clear the zone, but it took a funny bounce. I was coming 100 miles an hour. I caught my gun. It's probably the hardest shot I ever took. And I was able to beat Yari Curry's stick side, far side on his stick side. And here we go. So it's amazing, because I'll get to meet some the next teammates now and then. And now they always remind me, hey, JJ, get the heck out there. Get the game home. But, it was probably meant to be. And for me, I had missed a lot of those playoffs in 1986 because of a high sprained ankle that I did the first series against the Rangers. So I was out most of the series. I had just made a comeback in the Oilers series, so it was fun. It was a great win that night. It was fun to game the. It was fun to score the game winning goal, but I think I learned a lot about scoring that goal because it was tough for me to wind down as a 21-year-old and get prepared for the next game, the final game. So I think that I learned a lot about the mental part of the game that really helped me win the Stanley Cup in 93 when I was with the Montreal Canadiens because I was 28 years old. I was more mature, but I think not only was my play more mature, but my mental preparation and my focus was probably better as a result of scoring that goal. Well, sometimes you learn through failure because obviously everybody knows the result of Game 7. But no, it was fun. It was a great moment. Obviously, Matt, when you talk to a lot of people and I lived through it myself, I've never seen a building so loud in my life. I thought the roof was going to pop up. And it's amazing that everybody stayed up in the Spectrum. All the fans stayed up and clap and scream for the last, what, maybe 5 minutes remaining in that game. It was just amazing. And there's a lot of things that happened in that last 5 minutes, especially when the Oilers pulled their goalies at the end. And I think that there was a goalie play that XC would like to take back, but he's always joking about it. So obviously it was a great moment. It was a great team moment for us. And obviously it's unfortunate that we weren't able to close that series.
What does it mean to you, the fact that, like, that goal still resonates 35 years later in this city? Like, I'm not kidding you. I could probably walk down, you know, Market Street, ask 20 people J.J. Daigneau, and they'll be like, oh, yeah, he scored that huge goal against the Oilers. Or 75,000 people say they were at the Spectrum. Like, it really, it's got a big piece of Philadelphia sports history. It has to be cool to be the owner of that.
Well, I think that on an individual level, it resonates well. It makes me feel really good.
But obviously, it would have resonated much better had we finished the Oilers and win that Game 7. And, you know, I got to play with Grant Fuhr in 1998, I should say, in St. Louis. And we start to talk about that goal. He said, well, let's look at it this way, JJ. You got the goal and I got the gold. So, and Grant has always been a funny guy, but again, it's great. It's great that the city of Philadelphia remembers these moments. And I hope for them that with the team and the staff that they have right now, they get to win their third Stanley Cup. But it would have been much better for that goal to be a game-winning goal in Game 7 in Edmonton.
But you do get the Stanley Cup, as you mentioned. You move on to Montreal, and you win it in 93. I can only imagine winning a Stanley Cup incredibly special. Winning a Stanley Cup playing for your hometown team, that's got to be just incredible.
Well, it was amazing. For me, it was a dream come true because, like I said earlier, I didn't miss many Stanley Cup parades
when the Montreal Canadiens won 4 Stanley Cup from 76 to 1980, if I remember well. So I was a young teenager. I was probably 11, 12, 13 years old at that time. And I remember I would tell my team, I would tell my buddies, and the teachers would know that I wouldn't be showing up at school. I wouldn't be saying that to my kids that I'm coaching today in junior, but that I wouldn't be going to school because I was going to the Stanley Cup parade. But no, for me, that was important. But obviously, having the opportunity, 6 years later, 7 years later, to win a Stanley Cup with the Montreal, having a chance to really redeem myself, because it's always tough when you lose a Stanley Cup, but it's even tougher when you lose a Stanley Cup in a Game 7. And at that point, obviously, I was really disappointed, but I was also only 21 years old. No, the players that were disappointed were the Brad McCrimmons. They were the Mark Howell. They were the Brad Marsh, because they had played 13 or 14 years in the NHL, and they knew that going to a Stanley Cup final itself wasn't coming by every year. So it was tough to get there. It was tough to finish. It was tough to win. And everybody had to be in your you have to get all the right balance if you're going to win a Stanley Cup. You know, you can't have two of your top players get injured. You need your goalie to be on top of his game. So I think that's what happened in Montreal in 1993. I don't think we had the best team in the NHL at that time, and there's nothing wrong with saying that. I think that we had a great system, and we had a roster, 23 men on the roster that was willing to abide to winning within a strong defensive system. And you know, we're a team that really got better every series. I think that our toughest series was probably the Quebec Nordiques. So we got down 2-0 in that series. We won the series in six. We won the next four games after that. But it was probably the most physical series that we played. And obviously, I'm not taking anything away from the Buffalo Sabres, the Islanders, and the LA Kings. But the Quebec series was one tough series. And once we got through that, I think we got through that as a better team. And we only got better from then on. And the fact that we abided and played well within our structure, I think really shows when we went to overtime. We won 11 games in overtime, if I remember well. And it was just a matter of keep playing the same way. We played the same way at all time. And oftentimes we benefited from the opponent's mistakes.
So when it's all said and done, I think you played with 10 different NHL teams. You had a long, successful career in the NHL. When does coaching, is coaching something that you always kind of figured would be the next step, or was it something that your career's done, you want to stay in the game, and this is a way to stay in it?
Not one bit, Matt. I think that becoming a coach was pretty much the same process as me as a 16 and 17-year-old kid, not really saying out loud, this is what I want to do, this is what I want to be. I finished my career in 2001 after signing with the Minnesota Wild as an expansion team. They sent me to Cleveland that year. My conditioning wasn't that good. And I spent 1 year with the Cleveland Lumberjack, got called up once. At the end of that year, at 35 years old, after playing 900 games in the NHL, I told my wife, I said, I think I have enough. And upon my retirement, we moved to Scottsdale, Arizona, and I went to university for 3 years. So it wasn't like at 30 years old, I said, well, maybe I have three more years. I'd like to become an assistant coach. I'd like to become a head coach. Never crossed my mind. I moved to Arizona with my wife and two young daughters at that time. They were 4 and 5 years old. I went to Scottsdale Community College for 3 years. I took three classes per semester. I went to get the education that I didn't get because I played the NHL at 18 years old. And that's what I did. Following my third year in Arizona, one of my friends, Claude Lemieux, as well as Ron Filion, a boyhood friend, started an ECHL team in Phoenix. They brought back the old Phoenix Roadrunners of the ECHL and IHL, I believe, at that time. And they asked me, said, JJ, we know you're going to school, but would you like to join us? I don't know, assistant coach. So I said, yes, I'll get back into hockey and start teaching and see how I like it. So that's where I got involved again. I got involved with the Roadrunners and in the East Coast Hockey League. And following that year, I took a strong liking at teaching again and being around the players, sharing thoughts and new things, new ideas. And that's where I sent my resume to a couple AHL teams, especially the New York Rangers, where Jim Schoenfeld had coached me in Phoenix and was the head coach of the Hartford Wolfpack. So I sent my resume there. He called me. They brought me to Hartford. Had a good interview with me and then hired me at the NHL level. So that, I think that's pretty much where it started. And then from then on, it's just like a player. You're learning every day. As a coach, you're sort of a lifelong, it's like a lifelong learning curve. where you're trying to learn from everybody around you, players and coaches. And it's been fun. No, the AHL was fun for me. Being part of the Rangers was fun as well. And being able to teach kids like Dan Girardi on defense, Ryan McDonough, Mike Sauer, being around the Dubinskys, the Callahan when they were 20 years old. I think I was really, really fortunate to be around those kids. I was really fortunate to be able to share my career with those kids, the discipline that it takes to get to the next level. And the fact that oftentimes if you're in the AHL and you're a skilled player, if you go back, if you get called up or things like that where kids might be nervous, I don't think they should be, because oftentimes you get to the NHL level, it's easier because the skill level is greater. Everybody's in their position. The passes are better. And it was fun to share the knowledge with the best of my ability with all those young Rangers players that eventually played with the future Rangers players, I should say, that eventually got a chance to play with the Rangers.
So you've been coaching several years now. What, if you had to boil it down, what is your favorite part of being a coach?
To me, I think it's teaching both on the ice as well as teaching on videos. I think it's fun to show kids things that they're doing. Showing kids, especially at the level I am right now, I'm coaching kids that are 16, 17 years old. So it's a raw package that you have to work with. And so it's fun to take, for example, NHL clips, their clips, and join them together and teach kids pretty much everything that they're doing. You have to teach them how to play in the structure that you're trying to implement. But as defenseman or forward, you have to teach positional hockey, stick position, body position, just like I was taught by Jacques Lemaire, managing the game, because it's a tough something that's difficult for young kids to learn, because they can play a hockey game the same way from the first minute to the last minute. And obviously you have to understand that a hockey game is, there's different pulses of a hockey game, and there's ups and downs. You're not going to carry the pace or carry the play for 60 minutes. Sometimes you're going to lose momentum. Sometimes you're going to get it. So it's important to teach kids at a young age how to manage the way they play with regards to how the game is going. But I would say that just doing video one-on-one with players and just showing things to the kids and have them come back and say, you see that it worked. What you taught me worked. How you taught me to play that one-on-one in the corner worked. How you taught me to box out net front and pick it up is thick. It works. How you taught me to make my pass with a good follow-through. So I think it's fun to have a relationship with young kids that bounce back and forth, and to see kids just like I was when I was 16, 17 years old, and seeing kids getting better, taking pride in getting better, working to get better, but also having them being around, I would like to say, a good mentor for them to get better.
JJ Daniel, thanks so much for taking the time. This was fun.
Thank you, Matt. Really appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
And that will do it for this episode of One on One. Want to thank former Flyer JJ Daigneault for being our guest this week. Now, if you like the show and you want to help us out, if you listen on Apple Podcasts, leave us a rating and a review. You can follow the show on Twitter at One on One Pod. You can follow me on Twitter as well at MattLeon1060. Thanks again for listening, and be sure to tune in again next week when we bring you another conversation with somebody you should know more about.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
You know how in football, timing is everything? You miss your window by a second and the play's already gone. The holidays are the same way. Everything happens fast, and if you're not ready, you're scrambling at the last minute. That's why Amazon Prime is the real MVP this season.
With Prime's fast, free shipping, you can make those last-minute calls look effortless. Forgot your secret Santa gift? Need something for that office party? Prime's got your back, helping you go from uh-oh to all set faster than a two-minute drill.
Absolutely, Mark, because Prime isn't just about getting things fast. It's about making sure you never miss your shot. It turns that last-minute scramble into a smooth holiday win. So this season, remember, Prime's fast delivery has your back during the holidays, especially when it's down to the wire and can't wait another minute. Last-minute gifts delivered. It's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to shop now.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.